Scripture reading this morning will come from the book of 1 John. 1 John chapter 2, verses 16 and 17. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world is passing away in the lust of it, but he who does the will of God abides forever.
Good morning, all.
Good morning.
If you would turn over to Matthew, the fifth chapter. Matthew, the fifth chapter, continuing with our series here on Sermon on the Mount. We're in Matthew, the fifth chapter, and I want to look over into verse 27. Verse 27. He says, "You have heard it that it was said to those of old, 'You shall not commit adultery.' But I say to you that whoever looks at a woman to lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye causes you to sin, pluck it out and cast it from you. For it is more profitable for you that one of your members perish than for your whole body to be cast into hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and cast it from you. For it is more profitable for you that one of your members perish than for your whole body to be cast into hell. Furthermore, it has been said, 'Whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce.' But I say to you that whoever divorces his wife for any reason except sexual immorality causes her to commit adultery, and whoever marries a woman who is divorced commits adultery. Again, you have heard that it was said to those of old, 'You shall not swear falsely, but shall perform your oaths to the Lord.' But I say to you, do not swear at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by the earth, for it is his footstool, nor by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great King. Nor shall you swear by your head, because you cannot make one hair white or black. But let your yes be yes, and your no, no, for whatever is more than these is from the evil one." Okay, so when you were a kid, and you had a friend that made a promise to you, and then later on reneged it, didn't go through with it, and you started to complain, and did they ever give you this answer? "I had my fingers crossed behind my back." And you would take that to the appellate court, which was the other kids on the playground, and you would state your case, and then they would tell you what? "Well, yeah, the kid had his fingers crossed. That's on you. He's not obligated to commit this thing." And then I guess lately, it's this pinky swear thing. I don't know. Did you guys have... I don't know what that is. I guess that's a serious oath. If you pinky swear with somebody, you better be keeping that there. You know? And so it's always says it's a serious oath. And then we read these verses here, verses 27 through 37 in Matthew 5, and you may wonder, you know, how do all these connect here? But I do think that they're connected, and I think Jesus here in these three examples is giving us, speaking about integrity. What kind of a person are you? Are you a person of your word? Or are you constantly looking for outs all the time on the things that you're saying? You're looking for loopholes. Are you a person who can be trusted? You know, remember, this Sermon on the Mount is Jesus giving his constitution for what he expects of citizens in his kingdom here. So it's not just how you act kind of on the outside, but how you're feeling on the inside. You know, what do you believe? What your spirit should be like? You know, none of this going through the motions, outward appearance type thing. But genuinely, you're thinking, what pleases God? If that is what pleases God, then that's what pleases me, and that's what I'm gonna do. And that's why we have here over there in verse 20 of this chapter, chapter 5, verse 20, Jesus says, "For I say to you that unless your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, you will by no means enter the kingdom of heaven here." So, and at first we look at that verse and we go like, boy, this is really hard, because these scribes and Pharisees are pretty religious people. This seems like a tall order that I have to exceed their righteousness. But we're going to see here in these statements here, in this sermon too, that there's an awful lot of crossing fingers going on with these Pharisees and stuff. And it was all this outward appearance and not on the inward person itself. Okay, so integrity. Integrity is soundness. It's strength, not just on the outside, but on the inside. It's on the whole. It's going to hold together when it's tested here. This is why, I don't know if you noticed this, but you don't see many people planting silver maple trees in their yards anymore. I'm from, used to live at, my family home was in Huber Ridge there, south of Westerville. And we got there, you know, was one of the first houses built there. And they planted these silver maple trees on all the yards there. And the neat thing about a silver maple tree is they grow a couple of feet every year. And about 10 years, you've got a nice shady tree in your yard there. You can sit underneath it. But the bad thing about silver maple trees is once they get into their 30, 40-year reign or 50 years, they kind of rot from the inside out. They still look nice and strong. And so you'll see that here come this spring when the storms start coming in. They'll get on the news and they'll be like, let's look at the storm damage. And there's a shot of some car or a house with a tree limb falling on or a tree overturned. And everybody's looking at the car, but me, I'm looking at the tree and I'm going like, yeah, there's a silver maple tree. And you can see that it's all rotted out from the inside and stuff. And it just snaps off and you know, stuff. So they look really strong, but there comes the storm. There's no integrity in the tree, and there it is sitting on top of your car and stuff. So God wants us to be sound on the inside as well as how we look on the outside. And Jesus is going to give us three examples about this here. So we look here in Matthew 5, 27 through 30 here. It says, if you've heard it said to those of old, you shall not commit adultery, but I say to you, whoever looks at a woman to lust after her has already committed adultery in his heart. And if your right eye causes you to sin, pluck it out and cast it from you. For it is more profitable for you that one of your members perish than for your whole body to be cast into hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and cast it from you. For it is more profitable for you that one of your members perish than your whole body be cast into hell. Okay, so Jesus is speaking about adultery. We could probably put a lot of other sins in this little category, but let's just stick to adultery here. So what's he saying on this? The sin here is the sin of looking. You see the problem here? You know, the people say that the out that they have, so the guys are saying like, well, I'm not committing adultery. I'm just looking. You know, I'm not doing anything physically. I'm just looking here. You know, and then we're creating loopholes. Then we're creating these outs. I haven't committed any physical sin, even though the Bible speaks over and over again about the problem of just looking. Like over in Genesis 3 with Eve, Genesis 3 and verse 6, it says when the woman saw the tree and how the fruit looked and how it was good for food and that it could make you wise, then she wanted it. You look at David in 2 Samuel, the 11th chapter, what's going on? He just sees Bathsheba taking a bath and he starts in that thing. And then we take that, as Chauncey just read here in 1 John 2 and verse 16, for all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eye, and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world. So we get fooled from this, and our integrity takes a beating when we start to think, hey, I'm just looking at stuff. I'm not actually doing anything. But the cracks start falling, start forming here. Because we have to realize that sin does not begin in the actual act. It is forming long before we actually do that. You know, it's in our mind, it's in our heart. And then we're just looking for an opportunity to express that. Jesus is saying, no, you're already into that stage of, you're already in sin when you're just looking and anticipating a chance to do that. We got to be careful there, therefore, about what we see in our lives. We got to be careful about what we watch on movies and TVs and stuff like that, about what we read and that can affect us on that stuff. And we're living in a world, it's unfortunate, we're living in this world that makes it hard not to look. I was talking to Archie, we was exercising the other day, and he was telling me, what's that one place there in Westerville, you know, we're looking for a place to exercise. And then Archie gives me the warning, he's like, hey, you gotta be careful with that one, because that's where all the girls don't like to wear any clothes when they come to work out and stuff. And there's, you know, Archie and me, it was almost like, I just want to exercise. That's all I want to do. And you're looking on your computer, and I'm just going to some site, and then they put this commercial up there. I'm going, I didn't want that. I just want to look at some other stuff here and stuff. I was joking with Weeby one time. We were driving down the freeway, and we come up upon this semi with the big box trailer, and I guess they must be selling tanning products, but they got this girl in a bikini sitting on the stretched out on this thing, and I just go like, I said to Weeby, I wonder how many crashes this truck has caused. You know, our guys are just looking at the truck and not looking at anything else and stuff. It is, but it's really hard. So he says, so the integrity, it was to stop looking for the loophole so that I'm only looking. Now, when you're looking, there's those cracks and those fissures are coming into your integrity. And that's the reason we have verses 29 and 30. If your right eye causes you to sin, pluck it out. If your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off. Jesus is not telling us, hey, I want you guys to go self-mutilate yourselves here. He's not talking about that. But he's saying that for effect. He's saying, hey, this is serious. Integrity matters here. Don't be looking for this kind of stuff here. So we go down to Matthew 5 and 31 and 32, our next example here. Furthermore, it was said in verse 31, whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce. But I say to you that whoever divorces his wife for any reason, except sexual immorality, causes her to commit adultery. And whoever marries a woman who is divorced commits adultery there. Now you can kind of see here how integrity can be compromised by these questions here that this verses bring up. So you always get this from people, you know. Okay, so when can I get a divorce? I'd like to kind of know that, you know. What does my spouse have to do before I can get a divorce? Well, you know, or how many times do they have to do this before I can get a divorce? Or what do they have to do so I can divorce them? Or what do they not do that I can divorce them and stuff? So it's all this, what if they do this or don't do that or go back and forth like that? You can see, like, that's the thing. So how many times do I have to put up before I can get divorces on? So you see how the integrity and the soundness is being effective? Because this is how we are to exceed the righteousness of the Pharisees in verse 20 here. Because these were the questions that they were asking about also. And there were volumes of these rabbis had commentaries on divorce and stuff. When can you divorce your wife and all this kind of stuff? What's the reason, sir? All these kind of volumes talking about this, how you can divorce somebody. But none of the commentaries was about like, hey, you know, how can I have a godly marriage? I'd kind of like to know that. Nothing about that. Nothing about, hey, what's my role in making my spouse happy in our relationship? Or how can I smooth out these bumps that come along? Nothing about that. It's just, hey, how do I get out of this thing? No, these are the very questions that a lot of people ask today. How can I get out of this marriage? And I always said, I put down, says, I wonder, do brides get nervous before a wedding anymore? Now, they might get nervous about, you know, are the flowers going to arrive on time? You know, is it going to rain during the ceremony? That kind of thing. But do they get nervous about, with the question of, is this the right guy for me to marry? Do I want to marry this guy? Because the idea is they don't get nervous about that because they just think, well, if it don't work out, I'll just get out of this marriage and go marry somebody else and that'll be it. You know, so much for the, till death do us part. Integrity, taking a beating here when we're thinking about this. You know, hey, how can I get out of these kind of things and stuff? It brings us down to our third one in verse 33. And it's a subject about taking oaths there. So verse 33, again, you have heard it said to those of old, you shall not swear falsely, but shall perform your oaths to the Lord. But I say to you, do not swear at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by the earth, for it is his footstool, nor by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Nor shall you swear by your head, because you cannot make one hair white or black. But let your yes be yes, and your no, no, for whatever is more than these is from the evil one there. Now, a lot of times, Christians get confused in this passage, because they go like, hey, I got to go to court, and they're going to ask me to swear, and I'm going to have to tell them, no, I'm not allowed to take any oaths. You know, I can't be a police officer, because they have you swear allegiance. No, can't do that type of stuff. So, but first, you know, let's look at how oaths and swearing have affected the Pharisees' integrity. So it's an awful lot of got my fingers crossed in this section here on this, you know. You know, how bad is your integrity when people cannot trust your word here? And taking oaths is found all through the Bible here and stuff. But let's go over to the book of Hebrews, and we're going to see examples of oath. And it come up to start off that God himself has given oaths on this. We look here in Hebrews, the third chapter, Hebrews 3, and we're looking at verse 7. Hebrews 3 and verse 7, he says, therefore, as the Holy Spirit says, today if you will hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as in the rebellion, in the day of trial in the wilderness, where your fathers tested me, tried me, and saw my works 40 years. Therefore, I was angry with that generation and said, they always go astray in their heart, and they have not known my ways. So I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter my rest. Beware, brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God. But exhort one another daily while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. We see there in verse 11 that God swore an oath that they shall not enter my rest because of their performance out there in the wilderness. You know. So then we look over here in Hebrews, the sixth chapter, God gives another oath to Abraham there. Chapter 6 of Hebrews, verse 13, he says, for when God made a promise to Abraham, because he could swear by no greater, he swore by himself, saying, surely, blessing I will bless you, and multiplying I will multiply you. And so after he had patiently endured, he obtained the promise. For men indeed swear by the greater, and that an oath is, or for confirmation, is then an end of all dispute. Thus God determining to show more abundantly to the heirs of promise the immutability of his counsel, confirmed it by an oath. That by two immutable things in which it is impossible for God to lie, we might have strong consolation who have fled to for refuge to lay hold of the hope set before us. This hope we have as an anchor of the soul, both sure and steadfast, which enters the presence behind the veil, where the forerunner has entered for us, even Jesus, having become high priest forever according to the order of Melchizedek. So he's got that in verse 18, two immutable things. Or the two immutable things is God promised is number one. Number two, it's impossible for God to lie. But he gave an oath there. And with that, kind of like in verse 16, the oath then ends all the dispute. If you're wondering, is God going to keep his promise? Yes, he's going to keep. He said it. That means it's going to happen there and stuff. So he has given oaths, but not the Pharisees. Pharisees had a different idea. If we go into Matthew, the 23rd chapter, Matthew 23, and we're going to see how the Pharisees, who we, righteousness we need to exceed, how they thought of this kind of thing. So we're looking at Matthew 23, and then in verse 16, he says, woe to you, blind guides, who say, whoever swears by the temple, it is nothing. But whoever swears by the gold of the temple, he's obliged to perform it. Fools and blind, for which is greater, the gold or the temple that sanctifies the gold? And whoever swears by the altar, it is nothing. But whoever swears by the gift that is on it, he is obliged to perform it. Fools and blind, for which is greater, the gift or the altar that sanctifies the gift? Therefore, he who swears by the altar swears by it, and by all things on it. He who swears by the temple swears by it, and by him who dwells in it. And he who swears by heaven swears by the throne of God and by him who sits on it there. So, you know, they had a lot of ways of crossing their fingers on this thing. You know, we are to speak the truth. If we promise something, we need to deliver it. And I put down here, including lawnmowers. We might think that that's kind of stupid, but you can cause an awful lot of trouble with people. They borrow your lawnmower. That is a great honor if somebody allows you to borrow their lawnmower. And you don't bring it back, or you borrow their truck and you bring it back all dinged up and empty of gas and all that kind of stuff. People kind of notice it's that kind of thing. We kind of think, you know, like certain things we say and nobody's going to care. That makes a big thing. But if, you know, if we're always looking for ways to renege on our promises, on our word, then our integrity starts taking a beating. And the reason we are told to give an oath, okay, this is the reason we're told that we give an oath in court is because a lot of people don't tell the truth. And even after they do that oath, they still lie. He says, so it was funny. I would sit there in federal courthouse and you'd have a drug dealer that was stupid enough to testify. And the thing about drug dealing is it's a pretty much a cash-only basis. They really don't do credit cards there at the scenes and stuff. And so these people got, what do we do with all this cash? And so they got, when the DEA kicks in the doors and the SWAT teams go in there, and they start taking pictures of the enormous mounds of cash that are in these guys' houses. Just, they don't know where to put it. So they put it in the basement. They put it in the walls. They put it in everywhere and stuff. And then you got the guy sitting there looking at the pictures and he's on the stands going like, wow, I don't know how that got into my house. You know, and people are like, yeah, he is lying there. So the oath, when they take in court, the oath is not the insurance policy against lying. The insurance against lying is the prosecution for perjury that you have. So they're just doing this oath thing, just making it official. You know, if you lie, you're going to get in trouble here. It's not that thing. So it's just, that's what the threat of getting charged with perjury is the insurance against lying. And that still doesn't work that way. So we can take that oath in court. We can take that oath to get an office or something, being a police officer or whatever it says. They're just taking away our outs for lying on that thing. But we are to be honest in what we say, in the vows we take. Marriage especially, we take those vows. Our integrity matters to everybody that's around us also. And in being a trustworthy person, we can do much good in our Christian walk. Because a lot of the world is like these Pharisees. You know, what stuff can I get out of? And to be around an honest person is just a big light in the people in the world. And they see that you really stand out on that. You know, they used to say in the medieval times when a knight was taking his oath, one of the parts of taking an oath was speak the truth, even if it means your death. And that is the same integrity Christ expects from us today and stuff. So thank you for your kind attention on this. We take this time now to give us an invitation song for anybody that needs that. So we ask you, if there's some way we can help you, whether you just need the prayers, or you want to be baptized for remission of sins, or whatever, or how we can help you, just let us know. We'll stand now and sing our song of invitation. Come up forward if we can help you.